Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up in about 15 minutes, we will talk to the sponsor of the city council bill to ban metal baseball bats for high school ball, and someone from a bat manufacturer who thinks that's a bad idea. City council may do this today or tomorrow, folks, so if you have any interest in how high school baseball is played in New York City, this is right on the cusp, so we will talk about it coming up in a few minutes. But last Friday, to follow up on our Sean Bell discussion, in the wake of the outrage of the Sean Bell shooting, city council held a hearing to determine how well the NYPD is looking into its own misconduct when it does occur, and some tensions between the Civilian Complaint Review Board and the department were unearthed. WNYC's Bob Henley attended the hearing and joins me now. Hi, Bob.
Thanks for having me on, Brian.
So, by way of background, the Civilian Complaint Review Board, how does it work?
Right. Well, it was established in 1993, and the idea is that you'll have an independent body of professional investigators that will take complaints brought by civilians about the police department. Can be for demeanor, can be for excessive force, can be for a violation of one's constitutional rights. Say if you feel that a stop and frisk was, that there was no probable cause, you would go if you had follow through, and you would file this charge. And there's been quite an uptick in them. There are some over 7,000 in 2006 compared with 4,000 just 4 years earlier. And people have been saying this is because 311, the mayor's city helpline, has made it easier. And then what happens is the CCRB has a rigorous investigative process where they basically validate whether or not it's accurate. And then it's judged as a substantiated allegation. Then it's passed on to the police department for action within the police department. Inside the police department, there is a kind of JAG court, if you will, what they call the trial room. It's an administrative law process where police are made and held accountable for all kinds of things, whether it be excessive absence or excessive force, and they can be penalized with termination or loss of pay. So that's the process.
And does the CCRB substantiate most of the complaints they receive?
It's a very small percentage. I mean, you're into the single figures. And in fact, one bright spot for the city in general, according to the police department and CCRB, is a decline in the number of excessive force complaints that have been validated. So where we're seeing an uptick is in the question of stop and frisk, which, of course, we kind of track the disclosure that there were over a half million stop and frisk last year, demeanor issues, people, you know, what they would call abuse of authority, and those kinds of things. And so one of the things is that these then go to the trial room, and I guess the essential connection for the person who's bringing the complaint once it's substantiated is that the police department take action. That's critical for the system to work.
Right. But if only less than 10% of complaints by civilians against police officers are substantiated by this board, does that indicate that most people are bringing phony claims or that this board is biased toward the police?
Well, I guess you can make the argument that a lot of people lose interest because it is a process where you have to stay with it. Anything that anyone who's been involved with anything as mild as a consumer complaint, look at HMO stuff. When you want to get what you do from your HMO, you kind of drop off and there's a fatigue there. There's also, I mean, people would say that it's not aggressive enough. But again, this is not a court ruling. It's not a court proceeding. They do their very best to try to get the information. So I guess what it does do, the single-digit percentage of ones that are substantiated, it really means action has to be taken if that's the case. And that's where the breakdown happened in the city council. I mean, that was where the news was made on Friday.
Now, when you say breakdown at the city council, what do you mean?
Well, I guess in the following exchange that we'll have, what you see is Peter Vallone, who's chairman of the Public Safety Committee. It was a joint hearing between the Civil Rights Committee, chaired by Councilman Seabrook, and Peter Vallone, who's head of the Public Safety. They had Chief Charles Campisi from Internal Affairs come and speak and lay out how the police themselves. And in the middle of that testimony, he said that a number of the substantiated complaints, this is this very small single-digit percentage that the police department was getting, they found from the CCRB were so deficient on their face, they couldn't act on them. In other words, they couldn't hold the officers in question accountable. And, of course, in the audience was Franklin Stone, the preeminent attorney who heads up the CCRB board. And this exchange was between Councilman Vallone and Franklin Stone.
The police department stated that a significant number of cases they receive from you as substantiated do not include sufficient evidence to proceed, that they're investigating the possibility of returning these to you, In addition, there are times when the investigation is complete, but the evidence does not support the conclusion reached. That's a pretty serious allegation. They said that happens a significant amount of times. I'd like to hear your opinion about that.
Well, I'd like to address that. I think we categorically reject the suggestion that our investigations and legal analysis, that the quality has declined in any respect. In fact, we think it has increased, and I think it's increased over the time that I've been on the board.
So, Bob, that exchange surprises me, because rather than talking about the 90% plus of cases that don't result in substantiation
right.
by the Civilian Complaint Review Board, they're saying that very few percentage that does result in substantiation may not actually be real.
Well, and what's funny is that was in the Frank Capra movie. That's when I would have run out to the phone instead of used my BlackBerry. That was news. And unfortunately, there was only one other reporter in the room at the time when that was said.
So what's going to come of this here?
Well, what's going to happen, of course, is there will be follow-up by the city council, because there was also another disclosure, which was pretty interesting. Back in the 1990s, after the Mullen Commission, which really uncovered a lot of problems within the police department in terms of it policing itself, on the heels, I might add, of the Knapp Commission that came earlier, the city formed something called the Commission to Combat Police Corruption. And the idea was having an independent monitor, civilians, who would keep an eye on the way the police polices itself. And in a nation where the police force, and in the city where the police force is under civilian control, that would be a valid thing to do. Well, back around 2005, there was a pretty well-renowned lawyer, Mark Pomerantz, who was head of that agency and had decided that he wanted to look into things like how the police deal with fraudulent overtime claims or domestic violence or sexual misconduct. And at that point, there was a standoff, basically. Commissioner Kelly said that was beyond the purview of the commission. And Pomerantz resigned, saying he didn't have the time to go after the information, and he thought the panel should have subpoena power. Well, in this hearing on Friday, the new chairman who replaced Mr. Pomerantz, Mr. Armstrong, who was counsel of the Knapp Commission way back in the day, basically admitted to the council panel that there was only one employee left at this group that was monitoring the police, and that it had basically, quote-unquote, atrophied. And so this struck a lot of the members on the council. Well, of course, by that point, I think it was down to three or four members who were present. But so that's another example of a civilian oversight thing that was put into place that since 9/11 has really kind of atrophied.
So this panel seems to have exposed that departmental oversight of police officers in New York City is not a priority.
Well, at least in the post-9/11 era, the attitude is there were other things to do. And also, Mr. Armstrong is of the opinion now that the department's IAB department is very professional. And indeed, it's true. The Internal Affairs Bureau, if you look at what it does now, I mean, it's 1,000 members of the IAB. Okay, that's a huge commitment. That's one out of 37,000,
Internal Affairs Bureau,
NYPD Blue would call it the Rat Squad, but whatever, you have 1,000 officers committed. And in terms of integrity assurance, there are programs in place that are really significant. I mean, and so that shouldn't be just brushed over. But the question of oversight, civilian oversight, as an institutional matter, is it a crossroads?
Didn't the mayor allocate more money for the CCRB in the wake of the Sean Bell shootings?
Indeed he did. And one of the things in the State of the City address that was brought out, while the mayor did not mention Sean Bell by name, he did give rhetorical support to an era of mutual respect between the community and the police, and did indeed approve full funding. Historically, the CCRB had been caught in that budget dance that happens between the council and mayor every year, and the council fights for the funds, the mayor fights back. This time, however, he did concede the point. But Franklin Stone is no slouch and is, professionally respected. And indeed, the CCRB investigators are respected as well. So this is interesting, the standoff right now.
There was another incident over the weekend in a Brooklyn club where two off-duty officers were involved in a struggle with an armed man. One officer was shot and the other officer fired 8 times. And killed the man. Does this incident raise any questions as far as we know?
We're into the ambiguity of carrying one's weapon when you're off duty. Back in the day, the requirement was you were on duty all the time. Captain America, 24/7. And that raised some problems for people, because can you imagine going to Home Depot with your family and having to have your gun with you? So that policy kind of changed. Now it really is up to the discretion of the officer. One of the things that's raised, of course, is if you're in a night spot in an off-duty capacity and with your gun, and if you have a drink, like, is there not some requirement, or should there be some requirement for you to be tested after you've had to use your gun, especially in a fatal case, to see whether or not you're intoxicated?
Because in this case, the off-duty police officer was there not in his official capacity, but as a patron.
Right.
And there's at least one similarity to the Sean Bell case, and there are, you know, many differences. For example,
right.
that the man who was killed was armed.
Right.
And had fired at a police officer.
Right. And actually wounded him in the foot. So it's not like, right.
Right. But apparently somebody just eyeballed this off-duty officer who used his weapon and said, oh, yeah, he was fit for duty coming out of the bar.
Right, and that's the problem, is the question of standard. And the irony here is that if you operate a train as an engineer, or if you're a captain or a pilot on the Staten Island Ferry, if you have an accident, you are peeing into a federal cup. And unfortunately, for whatever reason, we have the special category for the police.
WNYC's Bob Henley. Before you go, one other thing about the police that we haven't talked about yet on this show. There were some revelations about how they do surveillance of
You're talking about the Hanshu case and the political
political dust-up. Activity.
Right. And that was the idea, is that after 9/11, there was a kind of idea that they had a broader range to look at what was going on with political activity. The federal judge in that case pushed back, said they'd overextended it. Now the city's pushing back again, so we still haven't resolved what's going to be the truth, what's going to be the policy going forward.
All right. WNYC's Bob Henley, thanks a lot.
That was a lot to cover, Brian.
And you covered a lot in a short amount of time. As we go on next to baseball bats, should metal bats be banned for high school ball in New York City? And if that happens, what about the rest of youth baseball? We'll talk about it with two guests, one pro, one con, as city council may actually take this action by tomorrow. Stay tuned.